Hey guys, welcome to the Indie Game Development Podcast. Here we tackle the challenges of indie game development head-on, from the technical side to the emotional side, and we talk about the secrets to conquering self-doubt on your journey to crafting games that people are going to love. Subscribe so you don't miss another episode, and if you haven't already, give us a rating and review so that this podcast gets shared with more people, because we'd really, really appreciate it. Ready? Let's go. Hey guys, welcome. I am Brandon from Sasquatch Bee Studios, and I'm off script here. This is very weird for me, but we wanted to do a special Q&A video for you guys around the time that we hit 20,000 subscribers, actually. And now that we've gotten around to it, we're actually very, very close to 25,000. So I suppose we could call this a 25,000 subscriber special, but we're not technically there yet. By the time this drops, we might be, we might not be, we'll see. But I just want to say very, very much, we're both very, very excited about the growth that our channel has been seeing, and we want to thank you guys so very much. So what we wanted to do is just take in a lot of your questions that you have for us in terms of us personally or our channel, or there's a whole list of really, really great questions that you guys asked. So we're just doing this in kind of a typical interview format. My desk is not big enough for two people to sit here, so my lovely wife and I are on opposite sides of the house doing a Discord call together, which is weird for me, but because she's usually right behind me here. But yes, hello. Say hello to my beautiful wife. She is not on on camera too often, but you guys have requested to see a lot more of her, particularly in the last devlog that we did. You guys seemed really happy to see her, so I asked that she would join, and I'm very happy that she said yes. So, and why wouldn't you want to see that beautiful face? So I'm going to go ahead and kick things right off with a question here. So this question is, hey guys, as a solo developer who has a supportive but not interested in games wife, how has the dynamic of working together as a team on your games been with your spouse? Would you say this is both your dream, or is it more one-sided and the other one being supportive?
Okay, so I think it makes sense for me to answer first on that one. So it definitely started out that I wanted to help support you in transitioning out of finance, because you were, I could see how unhappy you were. You were pretty miserable in that job, and I wanted to help you find some joy in your work, and this is something you really wanted to do. For me, though, it's definitely morphed over time. When I was younger, I wanted to be a video editor, and I wanted to go to film school, and I've always loved everything to do with art. So while it wasn't my dream to begin with doing video games necessarily, it's become something that we both love, and I plan to stick around for the long haul at this point.
That's good for me to hear. So I'll answer this as well. I love the dynamic of working with Nikki, and I'm not just saying that because she's my wife. I finally have an excuse to talk about game dev like endlessly with her, which I'm kind of joking and kind of not joking. Working with your spouse has its ups and downs, I'm sure you can all imagine, but what I will say is we complement each other really, really well. For instance, I do not think that Sasquatch Bee Studios would be making any money more than maybe like a couple of dollars a month from YouTube ad revenue or something like that if it wasn't for her joining the team. I'm a programmer, she is an artist, so in terms of the game design, we complement each other very well. And on the YouTube side of things as well, you know, I like to think that I have a good head for like video ideas and stuff like that, but she has a really good head for marketing and how to make things grow. So she pushes me in ways that I probably wouldn't have gone if it was just me doing this myself. And I'm very grateful for that because it's turned out pretty well. And I'm sure we'll get into more details about that later on.
Awesome. So we'll go on to the next question. So how are things going for you now? You sold your house, quit your job, and started a game dev business that was struggling to get off the ground early on. What's happened since? And have you run out of money? Also, I'm curious to know how your YouTube is looking economically. Like, will it be something that will eventually pay off for you?
All right. Yeah. So financial-wise, our high level, where we're at right now, high level on an average, we are bringing in money. We're bringing in a pretty good amount of money. There are months where the revenue we bring in is higher than our expenses to live. There are months like that. A lot of the time, it's still not there. As you can imagine, we sold our house, so we pocketed a bunch of cash. And at the same time, we managed to get lucky enough to do that. Our housing market in our area had just completely blown up in the years since we bought the house and in between then and selling the house. So we were able to pocket a good chunk of cash so that we had a couple of years to like burn through our savings and build something. We have at this point burned through the majority of that money. We still have some, like neither of us are really too worried at this point, but our savings is mostly run dry. And it's taken us a couple of years, but we have gotten to the point where our revenue has kind of mostly managed to catch up to our expenses. Again, I say mostly because I would say on average, we're still probably draining our savings more, but our income continues to increase month after month. And again, Nikki is a big part of that happening. On the flip side, we got a little bit lucky with the whole move. In case you don't know, about 6 or 7 months ago now, we had to move from Ontario in Canada to New Brunswick in Canada. And if you don't know where that is, that's like central Canada, sort of all the way over to eastern Canada. It's quite far. It was a 14-hour drive. We went all day and it was a very, very long drive, really far move. And we had to do that because our house in Ontario, our landlord couldn't afford it anymore. We were renting for a while in Ontario and our landlord could not afford the mortgage anymore. So we had to move. And now that we're on the eastern side of Canada, the housing market over here is a lot more in our favor. So our cost of living since we have moved has also substantially decreased. So that's a little bit lucky that worked out. Our revenue would not be matching our expenses as well as they are right now if we didn't have to move. Moving drained a lot more of our savings. Moving across the country was very expensive, but we are in a house again. We're not renting. We actually own this house again. So a lot has worked in our favor. Some of it has been luck and some of it has just been we've worked very, very hard building this channel together and working on our games and all of that stuff. And it's going pretty well. I don't feel like we're in danger of losing anything anymore. There was a video that I released a long time ago called Let's Get Real. And I was coming from a place of stress and worry financially at that point. We had been working for a long time and we only had a couple hundred subscribers and nothing was really moving. And I just really felt like I was failing life on every level. I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like... And I have you guys to thank for that, right? For coming back and watching all of our videos. So thank you very much for that. You know, it's not just YouTube. We've had to accumulate revenue from a lot of different sources. But between YouTube ad revenue and our Patreon revenue and much smaller sources, like our podcast has started paying us a little bit, things like that, as well as sponsorship opportunities and revenue that comes from Unity Asset, the affiliate program there. There's all these different sources coming in. So again, all of that, the whole business side of like, how are we going to make money from all these different sources, that came from Nikki. So I know I didn't give numbers, but that's high level where we're at. We're mostly covering our expenses now. And I expect that within the next 6 months to a year, we will be profiting, which is very, very exciting.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said there. All right, so next question. As a family man who might do the same thing at one point, I wonder how your kids are reacting on the changes you've made. The changes in working routines, household economy changes, the move, which was quite far, and how have family and friends reacted?
So ever since starting game development, I've been a lot happier, and I think ever since you've joined the team, I don't want to speak for you, but you and I have been a lot happier as a couple, I think, since we have started this together. There's been a lot of stress, but overall, we've been happier, and I think that kind of has this trickle-down effect to our kids as well. our older one has told us that he's proud of us and the work that we're doing. He sees that we work hard. He comments on it sometimes, and you know, it's hard to know the mind of a teenager exactly, but you know, I think they're proud. I think they think it's really cool. I know that our younger one, she likes to come in, you know, whenever I'm on the computer working on Samurai Auto and she sees something new, she wants to play test it. They love finding bugs. They're very good at it. They play the game in a way that I would not play. But I get a sense that the kids are proud of us. We're happier. We have more freedom in a way. I work more hours than I did at a full-time job, but you know, we work from home. If I'm feeling burnt out or really like low, like I can take time if I need to. It's more of a, sometimes I have to power through and work even when I don't want to. Working for yourself is very different in that way. One of the biggest struggles, I think, is the house. Keeping up with house chores, dishes and laundry and all of those different things. That stuff often gets put to the wayside because something's got to give from somewhere. Like I said, I put more hours into this than I did into my full-time job. And I do make time to spend with my wife and I do make time to spend with the kids. And yeah, time's got to come from somewhere. The budget is tighter than it used to be, which, you know, being in my mid to late 30s, I find difficult to kind of be like in a place where I felt like I had more money 10 years ago than I do now, but I'm happier in my work. So that's kind of more important to me. I obviously paying my bills is important, but we're going to get there. And but that's challenging for me just on like a personal level. What I can say definitively is me, Nikki, and our youngest one, we ever since the move, we love it here. This province it fits our personalities better. We're really thriving here. Again, it's hard to know the mind of a teenager for our oldest one, but I think, you know, he had to move in the middle of high school, which I think, you know, that's difficult, but I think he's handling it as well as someone in that situation could handle it. And in terms of, you asked about friends and family as well. So in terms of the reaction, I think everybody mostly at first thought we were a little bit crazy. So we've had I would actually say that we've had opposite levels of support at first in the very beginning from family and friends, in terms of my family and friends and her family and friends. But I think mostly now everybody's pretty supportive. I think people have seen like, I don't really understand. A lot of our family, they don't understand what we do or how we're making money during what we're doing. You know, it's hard for people to understand YouTube and you know, you're game developers, but you haven't released a game yet. Where's the money coming from? It's hard for people to understand, but I think we're mostly seeing support from family and friends now. 'Cause they see that we're happier. They see that we care. When you're passionate about something, that kind of just comes out. And you can tell in the way that I answer in big, long rambles like this. I'll give you a chance to talk now.
No, I think you've got it all covered. Everyone is really supportive at this point, and everyone can see how much happier we both are. I think you got everything.
Awesome.
So I'll go to the next one. You've covered this in parts of some videos already, but I'm wondering, what are the challenges and rewards of working closely with your spouse on such a high-stakes project? I'll let you take that one first.
Okay. I don't want to get in trouble here. I'll start with a challenge. My biggest challenge with working, it's so weird working with your spouse. Like there's this, my biggest challenge is asking you for what I need as if you were a coworker and like you're not my wife. kind of taking the emotional aspect out of it and just treating you like my business partner. I do have a lot of trouble mentally making that separation. So, you know, and I'm sure it can bleed into the personal too a little bit. I'm sure I won't talk for Nikki, but I'm sure that it can be annoying at times with how much I talk about game dev because it can, you can see it on her face, right? It bleeds into our personal time as well. Like we always make a little bit of time. If you watched our devlog, you know, we always spend an hour together in the mornings and we try not to talk about game dev, or I should say I try not to talk about game dev, and I fail a lot of the time. But you know, that's one of the biggest challenges. You go ahead with one and then circle around back to me.
All right. A challenge for me is time. You love pouring hours and hours into game dev because it is your passion and it's something you used to do when you were still working full time. So now that it's your job, you've got all this energy you want to put into it. And it's what pays the bills right now, too. So it makes sense that that's what you want to put your energy into. But I do find it can be a bit of a struggle when morning, afternoon, evening, nighttime, and weekends are filled up with game dev stuff all the time. So I think having that separation between game dev and like personal time is our biggest challenge. I'd agree with that.
Yep. Let's get to the good stuff though. I'll say a reward because there's pros and cons obviously, and there's big pros as well. Game dev, like when I was working full time, it kind of felt like something that I had to try to not sneak, but like almost I had to like, I felt like I had to squeeze it around things in my life. I had to do my work and then I would get home to much younger kids than I have now. So diaper changing and, you know, all that various things. If you're a young parent, you know what I'm talking about. It's hard to find time around that. And so I would have this element of guilt when I would make time to work on my game. And I felt like Nikki resented me for it at times. And I'm sure that wasn't her story, but that's how I saw it from my perspective. And now just with her working with me on this, that naturally has just gotten a whole lot easier. Because that's just, of course, like we work on it together, right? So it closed the gap for me. And I feel like it's made us closer because now there was this thing in our life that I thought caused a gap in our relationship. There was like, I was here and Nikki was over here on this side of the gap. And that gap was game dev. And that's not there anymore. And also just like when you have like an actual good relationship, which we do, we're very close and we listen to each other. She's a better listener than I am, but I do my very best. Like being able to work with someone that you love and that you're close to, it really is something very special. I'm sure some people wonder, like, don't you get tired of each other? And the answer is no. Like it's really rewarding to work with your partner. But it comes with the challenge of having to separate out the personal and the business stuff. So as I said, pros and cons, you go.
Yeah. I would have to say something very similar for a reward. You're my favorite person. I guess people probably don't know this, but we've been friends for over 20 years since I was in grade 8, I want to say. We went to college together. We've worked together before. So we work really well together and we've always, we've been a really good like driving force for each other to be really better versions of ourselves, I guess. And I think we make a really good team. So having that, you know, personal connection where you get to work with your favorite person all day, that would be my biggest reward.
Awesome.
Okay, so I'll go to the next question. What is your creative process like? For example, when working on Samurado, how do you come up with new ideas for enemies, skills, etc.? Do ideas just come to you or are you following a more structured process?
Oh my God, I could talk about this for an hour. You guys ask good questions. So, okay, I'll try to keep this brief. It's a very iterative process for me. We started with a very high level structure. It was planned in terms of what is the game loop and what is the game hook and what do we want high level? What do we want the final product to look like? And, you know, and then I kind of took that and I put it all onto paper in terms of what do I need to do that week or that month. So I always know what's next because I have that high level picture there. But a lot of the fine details I don't come up with until I'm on that task, like ideas for enemies and things like that. I have the problem where I have too many ideas. And so my challenge is finding out which ones I need to filter out, as opposed to how do I come up with ideas. For example, in our last devlog, I was working on environmental hazards. I was implementing a trap system into the rooms. So that came from an iterative process of, okay, this is a roguelike where the player is going through the rooms. There's lots of, it's very fast paced. There's juicy combat. There's all that good stuff. But I needed something, just something. I didn't know what, but I needed something to break up the combat every once in a while so that it's not just next room, fight, next room, fight, next room, fight. It was starting to feel very bland. So I was like, okay, what is that something? And I came up with the idea of environmental hazards. And as soon as I have that idea, then it's like, blah, 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 blah. I've got 30 different ideas for many, many different environmental hazards. I think I wrote down, I always do a brainstorming session. I wrote down on a piece of paper 15 to 20 ideas for hazards, but I ended up only implementing 6 of them. So I went through those and it was kind of a combination of which one is the least complex, but also matches the style of the game. I try to avoid the stuff that's too complex because I don't want this game to take years and years. So yeah, it's very much just a process that builds on itself. If you start with a good high level idea, things will kind of just trickle down and you'll get good ideas throughout the process. At least that's how it works for me.
All right. So this one, you'll like this one. If you have infinite resources for making a game with genre and style, what genre and style will it be?
If I had infinite resources, that's a really good question. So there's two, and one's a 2D game and one's a 3D game. Honestly, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, but Veil of Maya, the previous game that we were working on, is one of my dream games. That's my 2D dream game. Very heavily inspired by Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight was my favorite game of all time. So of course, when you play a game that hits you on that deep of a level, you kind of find yourself wanting to create something that hits people in the same way. So, but if I had infinite resources, it would be Veil of Maya, but it would be very different in how it looks and probably in how it plays. My favorite graphical-wise game that I've ever played was actually not Hollow Knight. It was Ori, Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps. We don't have the resources or the skill set to make a game that looks like that. We just don't. But if I had infinite resources, I would hire people that could make art that looks like that so that I could make a game that's that beautiful. And again, we are going to get into that more because I know that you guys have questions. So stick around in terms of like what's going on with Veil of Maya and all that stuff. But that's my 2D dream game with infinite resources is Metroidvania, basically Veil of Maya, but with Ori level graphics. My second game actually would be a 3D game, and it would be very Ocarina of Time-esque. Those games, Majora's Mask as well, they impacted me very deeply when I played them way back in the day. Obviously, I would want them modernized, but that type of game, I liked Breath of the Wild, but I kind of miss the old Zelda formula, and I do now feel they're clearly, that's the direction Nintendo's going, and I think they're sticking to it. They've shown that with Tears of the Kingdom, and I think that indies have an opportunity to come in and fill in the gap that people miss from the old school Zelda games, so that is something else that I would make.
All right, well, that was a really good segue into the next question, so we'll rip the Band-Aid and we'll talk about Veil of Maya. So here's a question. I'm new to your channel and I've only seen you work on Samurado. Are you still working on Veil of Maya?
Short answer is no. Right now, we are not working on Veil of Maya. Since we started Samurado, we have not worked on Veil of Maya, not for a single day. It's come up in conversation a couple of times, but here's the thing. I recently interviewed a very successful YouTuber and game developer who has tens of thousands of wish lists. And he said something that I very much agree with, which was, and it goes against the grain of what you might hear everywhere else a little bit. Everyone will tell you, don't make your dream game. Don't make your first game your dream game. Start small, make small projects. You'll hear that everywhere, all over the game dev space online. He had a bit of a different take, which was make your dream game, for your first project. And when you realize that you don't have the skills or the resources or the time, then, you know, basically fail, put it aside and start your real first project. That is kind of what has happened with Veil of Maya for us. Veil of Maya, as it was in scope in my head, it was outside of my skill level. And we do not have the resources between the two of us to make it the way that I see it in my mind without it taking 10 years for us to create while running a YouTube channel and doing, you know, basically part-time game dev on the side. It would take us 10 years or more to create that game. And I'm not okay with that. I don't want it to be that long before I release a game. So in terms of the future and, you know, after, so right now, Samurado is our full focus. Veil of Maya is on the back burner and it is a question mark. We're going full force forward with Samurado. I'm very proud of what Samurado has become. I cannot wait to show you guys the next devlog because it is really, really becoming really pretty and really awesome to look at, and really fun. And I actually literally this morning, I just filled my notebook with all sorts of ideas to really improve the game hook. So there's all the gaps are being filled with that game and I'm really excited about it. So we're going full force with that. Veil of Maya is a question mark. Whether we are going to return to Veil of Maya after Samurado, I would love nothing more than to sit here and make a definitive statement like say, no, we're not going back, or yes, we are definitely going back. I do not know is my honest answer. There are pieces of Veil of Maya, like the mechanics in that game were so cool and I really love them, but that game is a mess and it is way overscoped. And if we return to it, it's going to need some rejigging for sure, in terms of not just like how it was coded and all that stuff, but in terms of the story and in terms of the scope of the project, the whole thing would need to get rejigged. So I do not know what the future of Veil of Maya is the best answer that I can give you at this point. I would love to return to Veil of Maya if we were in a financial position to be able to afford like a full-time employee that could help us with the development of our game. If we could do that, then I think we could produce content for it much more quickly.
I have to agree with that. I think if we had the resources for an employee, it would be much easier to get back to that project. But for now, I agree. It's a bit of a question mark.
Yep. And I think I speak for both of us when I say we are hoping and planning to get to a point where financially we are able to actually hire an employee. Especially, it would be great to have someone who could help with like game development stuff. But mostly, I think what you and I are both looking for is someone that can take a lot of the editing off of our plates. Because as you can imagine, releasing 2 YouTube videos a week, it takes a lot of time on both of our parts. It's multiple days of editing per week. That's why I say we're very much part-time game developers. So, you know, if we would be able to hire someone to help with that, and we can't afford it yet, but if we get there, then things might change. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. So I'll give you another one. How often do you guys deal with the negative side of game dev, i.e. burnout, imposter syndrome, stress, worry, etc., and how do you overcome it? I know you love to talk about this, so I'll let you go first.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome. I'll start there. That's pretty constant. But here's like, I do think it's something because it's not, here's the thing, it's not as strong as it used to be, as it was when I first started my YouTube channel. I really did. It was very, very strong. It is a lot less now than it used to be. So I think what happens is it kind of just starts to fade out over time. I don't know if it ever goes away. I'll tell you in 10 years. But what I can tell you is over the last 2+ years, however long it's been, I've been taking the best actions that I think a game developer would take, basically. And in doing that, slowly but surely over time, I am starting to feel, you know, like the opposite of what imposter syndrome is, which is I'm starting to feel like a quote unquote real game developer. I'm starting to feel competent in my field. I'm starting to gain confidence in what I do. The more confident you are in what you do, the less imposter syndrome-y you're going to feel, I think. So taking, you know, if you're listening and like you were thinking of starting game development and you decided to start today, today was day one for you. You know, you might not be a game developer today, but if you take the actions that game developers take, which is you learn how to make games and you work on making a game, then enough time goes by, that gap is going to get filled and you will be a game developer. That's just how it goes. So that's what I'll say on that. Burnout comes in waves for me personally. There are times when I'm very high energy on the game, and there are very much other times where I'm very low energy and I'm not feeling all that great about it. And it can give me some stress or anxiety or whatever. All I can say is when I'm in a lower energy place, I do try to give myself more breaks than I need when I'm in a higher energy place. Because that's when I know I'm in danger of like really flatlining and burn, like metaphorically, burning out, right? So when I'm in that lower energy place, I try very hard to just recognize when I'm there, and I'll take more breaks. You'll find me playing more video games in the evening rather than coding on Samurai Auto or whatever, because that's what I feel like I need at that time. That's really just how I kind of stave that off. Stress and worry. I do stress, but probably not as much as I could. Honestly, this is going to be weirdly philosophical, but like I'm in my mid to late, I'm in my late 30s now. And I've just learned over the course of my life that things kind of just work out. Like you're going to go through hard times and you're going to get through them. That's just how it is. Like you can quit or you can persevere, but either way, that part of your life is eventually going to be over and you're going to move on to the next thing. And I don't want to quit. So we've persisted. We've gone through a lot of financial stress. We've gone through a lot of anxiety and worries, and it's not nearly as scary now as it was. Go back and watch the Let's Get Real video, because that's where I was in a really scared mental state. You can see me when I was at my very lowest and I decided to get up and just record my feelings and post them on the internet. But we're where we're at now today, which is not nearly as big as I would like to be, but, you know, give us a couple of years and growth just continues to happen. That's just how it goes. So I don't know, things just work out. So I try very hard to keep that in mind and to not stress and worry too much.
Okay. Yeah. Stress and worry for me, it definitely comes up. It's something that when I'm feeling stress and worry, I will make an action plan. I will write out exactly how much we need to make this month to be comfortable, and I'll make all the steps and we'll put something together and I'll get to work on that. So that's how I deal with stress and worry. As far as burnout goes, I work very differently than you do. I work really, really hard when I have a lot of energy and I put in a lot of hours. But when I'm feeling burnt out and I just don't have it in me, I will take a day. And working really hard when I have the energy gives me the opportunity to do that. So it works out really well for me. As far as imposter syndrome goes, I definitely deal with that when I'm working on art. I have a love of art, and I've gotten into, Brandon can attest to this, pretty much every form of art known to man as a hobby at some point in my life.
That's true.
Yeah, but I have zero experience or skills coming into this business with game art and making assets. And I've had to learn literally everything from scratch as we go. So I can often get overwhelmed and stressed out when I have to make something for the game that I've never made before. But so far, I've managed to find the resources I need to learn as I go. And when something is outside of my skill set and I'm just not able to, tile sets, for example, with Samurai Auto, I was really overwhelmed with that. And trying to figure out how to make the game look exactly how I wanted it to look, rather than holding up production and slowing up game progress, we decided to buy some assets to get us past that hurdle. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I've learned to pick my battles and accept that I'm definitely still learning and probably will be for a long, long time to come. And learning to accept help when I need it. This one I'll have you answer, Brandon. I know you both also left your work to pursue the game dev journey. What is your biggest challenge or worries doing this full time, and how are you conquering it?
So just to clarify, Nikki left her full-time job like 10 years ago to start a photography business. So just quote unquote leaving her job isn't quite what happened. But, you know, she did a photography business and watched the kids while I was off at my full-time job. But then she doesn't do that anymore. Now she's, as we said, she started out supporting me in this, and now it's kind of become like a full-time gig for both of us somehow. It just kind of naturally became that way. But my biggest worry is that, honestly, my biggest worry is that my story ends up kind of sucking. Like, the beginning sounds good on paper. I left my job, I sold my house to start game dev, to start a YouTube channel and release a game. And then, you know, my biggest worry is if I do all of that crazy stuff and then I release a game and it bombs and everyone hates it, that's like, that's the thing that I'll, you know, if I'm having a nightmare, I'll wake up from that, or I'll wake up with, like, that's one of the first thoughts in my head, is like, that's that constant stressor that's there in the background for me, is what if I did all of this stuff and then I release a game and it bombs? Like, then what the heck am I doing? Would I quit? No, but I don't want to deal with that. I would feel humiliated and embarrassed. And I am a firm believer that there's a lot of failure on the way to success, but I don't want to deal with failure on that big of a level. That is a worry and a stress of mine. That's just my honest answer. My biggest challenge is feeling inadequate sometimes, like days where I'm working on my game all day and that day ends and I don't feel like I have like a whole lot to show for it. I know that's a reality. I know that game dev takes experimentation. Sometimes you try something, it doesn't work, you scrap it. That's a part of the process. But whenever that happens, that creeps in to like, well, you're not good enough to do it on your first try and crap like that, right? My other biggest challenge, honestly, is just knowing that being on YouTube, I'm the most introverted person in the world, okay? I could have lived in a shack in the jungle and been like a happy human being. We took a quiz about how introverted versus extroverted you are. I scored a 100% introverted, okay? So that just being said, I'm not a YouTube personality. I don't have that kind of personality. I'm a sensitive person. So I do find it challenging being on YouTube and going through comments and seeing that there are people that just genuinely don't like me or don't like or don't agree with life decisions I've made or have really harsh things to say. That's the reality of being on YouTube. I understand that, but it is a challenge for me. I find that hard to deal with at times. I've had comments where I could like feel my soul leaving my body. It was like, I've been left a shell after reading this comment and it like ruins my whole day. But, you know, that's a part of building a YouTube channel. This is part of our business strategy. It's building up a YouTube channel, building up a brand so that we have a marketing platform for our games so that we don't have to necessarily rely on publishers and luck and all of that stuff. But yeah, caring about what people think of me is a challenge for me. So that's one of the bigger ones, actually.
All right. So how do you motivate yourself to work daily, and do you procrastinate?
Overall, I will say motivation isn't something I struggle with too much. And really, the answer to the last question is the reason why, for the most part, is like, you know, some of these comments that I get online that are a little bit more harsh or, you know, feel like we're going in the wrong direction or whatever, stuff like that sits with me and makes me feel like I have something to prove. And I already have a very, very strong core desire to prove to myself that this is something that I can do. I sat on the sidelines for years watching other game developers, watching devlogs, watching tutorials, even though I wasn't learning game development at that time. I was so fascinated by all things game development. I was obsessed. And I wasn't living it for a while. I was on the sidelines and, you know, all of these excuses and all of these doubts, like I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I don't have the, I could never be a marketer. I could never be on YouTube. This isn't like, there's all of this negative crap that was always flowing in for me. And now that is, I just have a really, really strong core desire to beat that friggin' voice to a pulp and make it shut up by hopefully proving to myself that I can do this by releasing a game that people actually like. Maybe releasing a game won't make that go away. I don't know. I'll tell you when it happens. But I don't know. I'm in the arena now. I'm on YouTube. I'm making videos. People watch it, which when I actually think about it is freaking weird, but that's how it is. And I feel like I have something to prove. And that drives me to work more than I did at my full-time job. So it might not be the healthiest reason to be working hard, but it is a reason and it gives me drive. So that's something. But of course, I procrastinate at times, especially when I'm in those lower energy moods like I was talking about. I will find ways to like prolong starting my work. But I do my best to try to realize when that's happening and remind myself of why I do what I do, why I love what I do, And just, you know, I try to catch it. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I realize what's happening and I don't care. I'm like, whatever. I'm gonna have an easy day. And I try not to beat myself up about that too much. I'm a human being and I just try to wake up and do better the next day.
Yeah, that was a good answer. I would say you're not a big procrastinator. I'm kind of the master of procrastination when it comes to the two of us. And I often end up having to work until 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday every week because of how long I put things off for. So I won't give advice on that. I'm not great at it. All right. So if you were to give only one piece of advice, what would it be? It could be life related, not just game dev.
Okay. I'll give you one of each. I'll give you a game dev answer and a life answer. Game dev answer, and I know this is cliche, but it, you know, learn to embrace discomfort and failure. It's like super cheesy and cliche, I know, but honestly, like you will learn much more rapidly if you can just accept the fact that you're going to try things and you're going to screw it the heck up, and it's going to happen a lot. You know, if you berate yourself every time that happens, it's a waste of your energy. And it's really like, you know, if you're going to learn to play the piano, for example, or anything, learn a sport, you're going to suck at the beginning and then you're going to practice and then you're going to get better. And it's just, that's just the way that it goes. And you screw up a lot and you remember those screw ups a lot more than you remember the stuff that you did well. So, you know, just really that feeling of discomfort. And I'm being very literal when I say discomfort. Like I feel discomfort when I think about marketing for game development. I don't like marketing. It makes me feel a lot of crap in my chest that doesn't feel great. But I try to embrace that feeling because usually when I'm getting that feeling, that is an area that I'm weak in, that I probably, that's like a wall that I'm going to have to break through if I want to get where I want to go. As for a life answer, mentally, my default state often lands on like the more negative side of things. I can very much look back on my life and see a bunch of struggles and hard times, no matter what area of life I was in. I can always look at the negative side of things. That's just kind of my default. The advice that I would give is advice that I would give to past Brandon, the one who sees things very negatively. Challenge yourself to view life as an adventure that's filled with all sorts of mysteries and opportunities around every corner. Like you can think of it as a struggle. Everything's hard. Everything's got to be hard. Even game dev, it has to be so freaking hard. Like to do one little thing that I'm happy with as a final result on my screen, it's hours and hours of struggle. And I can view that as a really, really crappy thing. Or I can think of it as this kind of a fun adventure. It's like, okay, how the heck am I going to figure this out? There is a kind of exciting aspect to it. And I have to force myself to view it in that way sometimes. But this is actually something I try to do in the mornings. I don't do it every day, but it's something I try to do because I wake up with stress a lot. And like, I wake up at like full alert. I'm like, what do I got to do today? It's like, ugh. And I try to just wake up and focus on what am I excited about? What am I grateful for today? Rather than like this exhausting, like, what friggin' hell am I going to have to overcome today? Like, I can very much go there very easily. But I find I have more energy if I try to look at things in a more positive light.
All right. But before I give my answer, I want to give a fun little fact about you based on something you said. You talked about marketing and how it makes you feel icky. And I don't think a lot of people know this, but you went to college for 2.5 years for marketing.
Yep.
And I'll never forget the very first day you went to the selling class 2.5 years into the program. It made you so uncomfortable that you dropped out of the marketing program that day and transferred to accounting. Yeah. The more introverted version of business. Yeah. So that was just a fun little side note. But for me, my little piece of advice is also going to be pretty cliche. I'd have to say, don't let fear stop you from pursuing your dreams. And I will put a little disclaimer in there because I know some people think we're crazy, and I won't suggest anyone sell their house or quit their job, but rather find a way to pursue your dreams, whether it's part-time, full-time, or just in the 5 minutes a day you have that's free. I think that fear is what holds most of us back from living the life we want to live. And I'd love to see more people overcome that fear and believe in themselves just enough to go after what they actually want in life. So I'll be super cheesy too.
I love that answer.
Okay. So if you could have any game dev on the podcast, who would you pick and why?
So originally, I thought of, I'm going to butcher saying this name, Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Mario and Zelda at Nintendo, who is obviously a legendary game designer. I don't even know what we could possibly talk about, though. That was my original thought. But honestly, I would have to, my final answer, I'm going to have to land on someone much more personal to me, and that would be Thin Matrix. He is important to me very personally. Like, he is, as far as I know, he's the original devlogger, or at least the original devlogger that like found a lot of success doing what he's doing. I watched every episode of his Aquilinox series. Like, I watched that game get created from start to finish, and he is just a very big part of why I am at where I'm at in my life today. He inspired me. I you know, he has this amazing work ethic. He's not Danny. So he has a personality that reminds me of my own a little bit. Like, I don't particularly consider myself to be very entertaining or funny or goofy or anything, really. I like to be serious. That's just kind of who I am as a person. And that's the vibe I get from him. Anyways, he doesn't do a lot of joking on his channel. And yet I found his stuff super interesting and entertaining to watch. He is one of my personal heroes that has found success on a level that I would prefer over someone like Shigeru Miyamoto, who is like this, you know, high level designer at a AAA company. That's not what I want with my life. I would rather, you know, work from my home office with my wife and maybe in the future a small group of other individuals as well, making smaller games that touch people on a more personal level than AAA games have to, which are a lot more, you know, indie games have this way of being a little more rough around the edges. You can make it for a small group of people, whereas AAA companies have to make games that appeal to a massive audience. And that's not really what I want. But yeah, Thin Matrix, I would have so many questions for him. I would be able to talk to him for days, honestly, but I would also be very nervous. So I don't know how that would even go.
Okay, so how do you prevent scope creep when developing game systems when you constantly think about features or capabilities that you want in the system but don't necessarily need yet? Is there any harm in perfecting a system before making content that uses it?
This is a great question, and I love this question because I can relate to it very much. Let me start by saying I am not an expert in preventing or avoiding scope creep, okay? Not by any means. But I can say that with Samurado particularly in the last couple of months of Samurado, I have improved a lot. I have a list of my tasks that I work through, and I don't really go above and beyond that when it's not needed. So I have improved. So what I will say is, short answer, yes, I think there can be a bit of harm in perfecting a system before making content that uses it. And really, it's just for an obvious reason, right? Things often work differently in your head than they do in reality. So you can just end up wasting a lot of time and end up having to scrap some stuff. But what I would say is, you need to know high level what you would want that system to do for your game. Okay, so I'll give you an example from my game, Samurado. So, and from the devlog that we were working on, the last one, we introduced traps. Now, I didn't work on it in that devlog. I had made it right before. I made the whole system for how do the traps fire. And I needed to have several different firing modes. I needed to be able to fire them sequentially from a list so that I can set up traps in a very specific and certain way. I needed to be able to fire them randomly. I needed to be able to fire them sequentially but random, meaning, like, let's say you've got a room with a whole bunch of traps spread out all over the place, and I want each of them to fire three times. Well, I've got a mode where, for example, it's possible that the first one could just fire three times and then the rest of them fire in some random sequence. It's possible that that could happen. I've also got another firing mode where they each have to fire once, all of them, and then they'll move on to firing the second time and then the third time. So I had all of these very particular scenarios in mind that made me need those particular firing modes. So if you have a specific use case in mind, then make a system that fits everything that you need. Make a system that accounts for that. And I would just say, try not to go above and beyond that. Indie dev is very special because, especially if you're someone in my position, I am both the designer and the programmer. So I figure out something I want to put into the game, and then I get to program it. And it's very easy to take that way too far as the programmer and try to make it too much. So what I would say is, be the designer first and then give your programmer self the job to do it. You're like, hey, I need the system that does this, this, and this. And you don't need to go beyond that. Over time, you will learn to develop systems that are more structured and less like spaghetti code and all that stuff, so that if you do need to add something, if you think of something really, really cool that's going to add so much and you do need to add something, it won't be too bad to add it on later. But you can just end up making all of this stuff that's a big time suck for you. And I think that's a big part of where people lose motivation is you're developing systems and yet there's no content being made around it. At least for me personally, I lose motivation when that happens for too long.
All right, I'll go to the next one. So as an aspiring indie game dev trying to finish his first commercial game, as if that isn't hard enough, fate has blessed us with a little baby boy to be brought into the world soon. How do you manage time, life, work, and family? It's a good one.
That's so good. So you might not like this answer. I don't know how my family feels about it, but I have found that I have to schedule time for family. You guys know, Nikki and I spend an hour together every morning. We try to do it before we have to get the kids up for school, so that, you know, we have an hour together where we just talk, we bond, we, you know, strengthen our relationship as a husband and wife, and then we get the kids ready for school, and then we start the work day, and now we're business partners. That's, you know, ideally how it works out perfectly. I also schedule time with each of my kids. Like, they know when they get home from school, like, whether or not they know when I'm going to spend time with them. Basically, I give them 45 minutes to an hour each day as well. And I take turns with that because I don't have the time to do an hour with Nikki and an hour with each of the kids every day. I don't have that much time. So I alternate the kids. I schedule time to do a video chat with my parents every weekend. They are going to move here, actually. I think it's okay that I say that because they've made it official. So they're still back in Ontario, but they don't have any family left in Ontario. So they want to pack up and move here, which I'm very excited about. But in the time being, we schedule video calls every weekend so that we keep our relationship strong. So I schedule family stuff. As for work, I usually, for the day, I usually have a goal in mind for what I want to get done. I very rarely reach that goal, which drives me insane. But it does, I have a goal that's usually very ambitious, and it does push me to try very hard to get there, and it ends up making me work very long hours. But I always go to bed feeling good about the amount of work that I put in that day. Not always feeling great about the results, but I always feel good about the amount of work I put in, which is important to me. And other than that, like, a big part of time management for me is just when I'm working, I'm working. I try really hard to avoid email. I try to avoid texting. I try to avoid going on Discord. I just have my headphones in and I do work because I can't make time for everything that I want to do all day. So I have sections of my life. I have family time. I have work time. And when I'm working, I'm working. I don't answer every single email I get in my inbox. I wish that I could, but there's the matter of prioritizing my time. Not everything has to be answered. I can only imagine as our channel grows, I'll continue to get more and more emails that come in that I won't be able to respond to. I feel horribly that I can't answer every email, but I have to pick and choose my time in order to, you know, be a good husband, be a good dad, and be a good YouTuber and game developer, and that those are my goals in life. Also, just establishing boundaries. Like, for example, my parents, my family, my friends, they know when I'm working, and they will only call if it's like important. They, you know, so very much just I protect my work time very closely because I have a lot to do in a day. And if I'm kind of half distracted with this and half distracted with that, then I'm not going to be able to get done what I need to get done for that day. So I hope that helps.
I'll throw in a little bit there too, because I think we work so very differently when it comes to this. I think Brandon mentioned before, I'm kind of like a nomad. We're all like work for an hour in bed or like for 45 minutes at the dining room table. And I don't schedule time with the kids and with you the way you do. But what works for me is, as far as work goes, I have a list of, I don't know, 3 or 4 must do activities for the week where like these are the needle movers that are going to take our business to the next stage or get something done that needs to get done. And I make sure that I get those tasks done during the week. However, I prioritize family time and life time and my personal time above work, which, and it's a different approach, but it works out well for me too.
Awesome.
All right. So next one. Will you ever make a series about trying your subscribers' games?
I think we'd very much be open to that. My answer would be, let us know in the comments if that's something you would be interested in watching, because that's really the biggest factor. It's not really about us. It's more about what you guys want to watch. So let us know if that sounds interesting to you down below.
All right. And I think this is the last one we have here. What are some skills and interests outside of gaming and game dev that you've found helpful, influential, or applicable to making games and videos? Alluding to what Scott Adams calls a talent stack, injecting seemingly unrelated things into the process in order to produce a better result than you'd get just by leveraging obviously related domains.
I know you're going to talk about personal development, so I will start there. Personal development, like just working on myself, building my confidence, going through my emotional crap. Just like personal development is so all-encompassing, I can't define it in a sentence, but it put me on the path that I'm on. It gave me the confidence to pursue what I wanted to pursue. So I wouldn't be here at all if it wasn't for personal development and learning to take action regardless of how afraid I am. That's huge because that got me started. Nikki did mention I took 2 years in marketing in college before transferring to accounting. I do feel I hate marketing, but marketing is going to be a huge asset to you. If you enjoy or know anything about marketing, it's going to help in the game dev business in a major, major way. You know, if you were going to run a studio that had lots of employees, marketing would be a whole huge division in your building. Like marketing's huge. You need a lot of resources towards it. You need a lot of knowledge. So knowing how to do market research as well, which again is part of marketing, but that's a whole skill in and of itself in terms of, you can emulate other people's success if you know how to do market research properly. If you can look at someone else that's in your genre making a game similar enough to your game, you can research what kind of social media posts did they do? What was their plan? What did they do before releasing their game to tell the world about their game? What did they do to get people excited about their game? What did their trailers look like? All of these different things, you can research it and you can build your own profile around that, right? You can learn from their stuff. I don't know if curiosity is a skill, but I'm going to go ahead and say that anyways, because I think curiosity and a love of learning is absolutely vital in the game dev space. The learning literally never stops. You've always got, you know, I've always got a wish list of skills that I want to acquire or get better at. But there's just so many skills that I want to master that, you know, they kind of have to come at a slow but steady drip pace. But if you don't like learning things, then game dev is going to be hard for you. So that's very important. And honestly, being a gamer, just enjoying video games is a really great background to have, because you're just going to inherently know what's fun and what isn't. You want to make something that you would enjoy playing, and you need to be able to define in kind of a quantitative way. Like, you need to be able to define what makes a game fun. If you can play a game, you should be able to break down why is it fun. If you can do that, and being a gamer does help with that, because it just kind of, it all soaks in and sits in the back of your brain. If you can analyze games, that's going to help with you becoming a game designer. How do you, you know, coming up with ideas for what is going to make your game fun? What is the game loop? What are the challenges? All these various things. I think being a gamer just inherently is going to help you out a lot with that.
Yeah. And surprise, surprise, I'm definitely going to say self-development. For me, I struggled a lot, I'll be really honest here, with mental health issues through all of my teens and all of my 20s. I found I was really unhappy and complacent during most of my young adult life. And I got into self-development almost 5 years ago now, when your brother passed away. And I've been obsessed with finding new ways to improve myself. And I've watched my life transform into something that I couldn't have hoped for back then. I feel like it's unrecognizable from what it was. And self-help and personal development was something I used to be just like, you know, most people. I thought it was hilariously lame, and I used to make fun of people that were like really into it. And I don't even think you could pay me to read a self-help book back then. But when I look back, pretty much all, I would say all of the positive change in not only our lives, but in our business, and all of the good things that have come in the last few years have been a direct result of putting in that work and just trying to become better versions of ourselves. The only other thing I would add is kind of in line with what you said, that curiosity, the love of learning, and putting yourself outside your comfort zone. I think if we didn't do those things, I don't think we could ever have pulled off what we're trying to do here. I'm not sure we could have ever gotten it off the ground anyway.
That's very true. And I think it looks like that is the end of our list of questions. I want to say again, guys, thank you so much for sending us such a great list of questions. This came from our patrons. This came from our Discord. This came from YouTube. From all over, you guys asked us all sorts of great questions. I'm sorry that we couldn't answer all of them. I'm a bit of a rambler, as you can tell. So this has probably gone on long enough. And I do want to say, like, just again, I really appreciate all of you guys coming back, checking out all of our videos, watching our videos, leaving your comments, you know, even the critical ones. Everybody wants to be helpful, I think. Like, even the ones I mentioned having a couple of comments that made my soul feel like they're like my soul had left my body. There was nothing mean that was said. There was nothing rude that was said. I might have called it harsh, but not rude and not mean. It was just people out there that care about what we're doing, and maybe, you know, they have opinions on the matter. That's really all it is. Like, I really, even though sometimes I struggle with being on YouTube and whatnot, like, I really just do appreciate you guys and the fact that you all you care enough to show up. The fact that we have so many patrons blows me out of the water. I never could have even imagined Patreon like doing as well as it did. Like, I appreciate all of you guys so much. I appreciate all of our Discord members so much. You know, like just yesterday, we were having some spam stuff come through, and we just had volunteers, like just like that. And these people, like, we have such great people. I recognize names. I recognize even their icons. That's like their face in my mind. Like, I feel like I know these people. There's such a great group of people in our Discord. We got two new moderators yesterday, just out of the blue because they volunteered. Such a great group of people on Discord. You know, like, I'm blown away with gratitude for you guys for continuing to come back. So the spirit of this video was to thank you guys and to appreciate the fact that you have helped make Sasquatch Bee Studios what it is. You know, 20,000 was the spirit of this video. It's basically 25,000 now. We're just a couple of hundred away from that. So that's beyond what I could have imagined, especially when I made the Let's Get Real video. And I think we had like 608, I think it was, subscribers when I recorded that. And it was just killing me inside, like, that it was so slow. It's not that way now. And it blows me out of the water. And I can't even believe it. So thank you guys again so very much. Thank you for your great questions. And Nikki, thank you for coming on. I really had a lot of fun doing this with you. I know that you were camera shy, so I think everybody appreciates you getting out of your comfort zone and getting on camera and doing this interview for Sasquatch Bee Studios. If you want to say anything, I'll stop talking now.
I'll keep it brief. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
And that's all I got, guys. If you loved this episode and if you haven't already left a rating and review, please consider doing that now because it really helps the podcast grow and reach more awesome developers like yourself. Thank you so much.